The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. Our articles are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we're going to learn how violence has changed some communities once frequented by tourists. Our first story is headlined, "Haiti Gangs Take Aim at Disabled Children," followed by a quote, "Put those kids out of their misery, or we will." It was originally written by Jacqueline Charles for the Miami Herald and was also published in the September 16, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. Now the story. Born with cerebral palsy and a buildup of fluid in his brain, Wasserman, 7 years old, hadn't eaten in days when he and two other severely disabled children were rushed from their orphanage outside Port-au-Prince to a hospital in the Haitian capital because they were suffering from uncontrollable seizures. As they passed the soccer field near a shanty town along a major thoroughfare, their truck suddenly stopped. Heavily armed men had taken over the road and were ordering traffic to turn back. "The gangs cracked our windshield and threatened to shoot our tires if we didn't turn around," said Susie Crabacre, who has been caring for Haiti's disabled, abandoned, and orphaned children since 1994 and was tracking the trip 3 weeks ago from her home in Aspen, Colorado. "Even though we had a dying kid in the car, they were just laughing at us," she said. By the time the truck made the hour-long trip back to Crabacre's Haiti Children Orphanage, Wasserman was dead. The other two, Jean-Claude, 14, and Babette, 20, died soon after. "We've had three kids die within 3 days of each other, and another one this morning because of all this violence," said Crabacre, who co-founded the orphanage with her husband. 2 years after the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse, the violence in Haiti, by all accounts, grows worse daily. More than 80% of the capital is controlled by armed gangs, continually battling over turf. Children are unable to go to school, families are starving, and hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced from their homes amid an unending frenzy of rapes, kidnappings, and killings. And yet, even among a population facing daily depredations, the country's abandoned and disabled children stand out. There is a solution at hand for the 62 disabled kids and adults at Haiti Children, a life-saving opportunity that would get them out of the country and into the care of an internationally renowned charity in Jamaica until it is safe to return. A respected Catholic priest, a former U.S. ambassador, and the Prime Minister and Foreign Minister of Jamaica are pushing for the move. But as with all things in Haiti, nothing is easy. Crabacre has been trying to move the kids, many of whom she has been watching over since they were infants, into the care of mustard seed communities in Jamaica since June. But her efforts are being blocked by an entrenched Haitian bureaucracy, a troubled child welfare system, and a disturbing history of children being whisked out of the country in times of crisis, never to be seen or heard from again. Abandoned by their families in hospital wards or on roadways, the kids at Haiti Children have been diagnosed with a variety of disabilities, including Down syndrome, multiple sclerosis, autism, and brain injury from seizures. At least one little boy is HIV positive. Those who do not use a wheelchair have difficulty walking. They are conditions that not only require specialized care, but also make them outcast. Stigmatized, they are called kakobi, meaning cripple in Creole. A gang invaded the orphanage last week, that was the week of September 16th, pointing their guns and searching the place as they taunted the kids in wheelchairs. "The gangs have been shouting, 'You need to put those kids out of their misery or we will put them out,'" Crabacre said. Next section, children who left after the earthquake. Ariel Gentil Village-Rion, the director of Haiti's Child Welfare Agency, the Institute for Social Welfare and Research, said the matter is very complicated. Other than a letter from Mustard Seed and a single phone call from Crabacre, Village-Rion says she doesn't have anything official from the Jamaican government and no one has come to see her about moving the children. Instead, she said, Crabacre and her supporters have pursued a pressure campaign involving Haiti Prime Minister Ariel Henry, believing it will get her to agree to ship the children off to another country. Henry is one of the country's few neurosurgeons who has spoken to Village-Rion about the request but has not said what he plans to do. She calls the situation problematic. Village-Rion said if she were to open this door, she doesn't know what will happen to the children. I have no control over what is happening in the other country, and I don't know what they will do with the children. It's not that she isn't sympathetic to the plight of the children caught in the crosshairs of Haiti's violent armed gangs, Village-Rion said. She has agreed in some circumstances to allow sick children to leave Haiti, but decisions are made on a case-by-case basis. And after doctors and caregivers have come and explained the situation, she adds. In their telephone conversation, Village-Rion says she explained to Crabacre that as the chief protector of Haiti's children, she just can't throw the country's doors open for everyone who wants to leave. She also noted that every time Haiti finds itself in a crisis, children become prey for exploitation and traffickers. That was the case after the catastrophic 2010 earthquake, when children and an unprecedented baby airlift were taken out of Haiti, some without the consent of the government or their parents. Up to this day, we are trying to document children who left after the earthquake, Village-Rion said. We don't know who left and who didn't. There is another complication. Some of the children are technically not orphans. A 2017 study by the London-based nonprofit Lumos, found by Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling, estimated there were at least 30,000 children living in orphanages in Haiti. However, more than 80% are not actually orphans because they have at least one living parent, the study said. Because of the country's deep poverty, parents often place their children in these institutions, believing they will be better cared for. Village-Rion, who has prioritized the removal of children from orphanages and reuniting them with their parents, said that before the kids at Haiti children could be sent to Jamaica, she would need to contact every parent to get their consent. I just can't take people's children and send them to another country, she said. Village-Rion said she has a bunch of requests on her desk from orphanages seeking to relocate children out of Haiti. With the exception of Crabacre, all are trying to go across the border to the Dominican Republic. The question, she asked, Village-Rion said, is why can't they do what others have done and relocate to Haitian cities where the gang violence isn't as intense as Port-au-Prince? Crabacre responds that most of the kids in her care are in need of specialized care that is available only in the Haitian capital. Our once-thriving children are dying due to lack of medical services, Crabacre said. We will not become a hospice center for children who have opportunity to thrive if allowed to leave Haiti temporarily. Next section. We just really want to assist. Mustard Seed Communities was founded in 1978 by Roman Catholic Reverend Monsignor Gregory Ramkasun when he was still a university student and saw disabled children abandoned on the streets of Jamaica. Today, what the Trinidad-born priest began in one wooden building is now a nonprofit operating 13 group homes across Jamaica. The Catholic charity also has homes in Nicaragua, the Dominican Republic, and Zimbabwe, and will soon open a home in Malawi. All are administered from Jamaica, said David Savala, Mustard Seed's head of business development. We just really want to assist in caring for these disabled children, he said, about the Haiti children kids. Crabacre first sought Mustard Seed's help on May 30th. She wrote Ramkasun, saying that she had 62 disabled children and dependents who were at risk of disease or death because food, critical medicine, and medical care were being blockaded by military-style gang interference. Ramkasun wrote to Jamaica Foreign Minister Kamina Johnson-Smith, seeking her assistance with the Haitian government. The outreach was timed by a recent visit by Henry to Kingston. Everywhere Henry went, Silvera said, he was being told, let mustard seed help you. The charity has also reached out to a former U.S. ambassador to Jamaica, Luis Moreno. A retired diplomat, Moreno has served as deputy chief of mission in Port-au-Prince. Working with Haitian entities at the best times can be incredibly difficult. Under the present circumstances, it is nearly impossible, said Moreno, who wrote to the Haitian government vouching for the organization and Ramkassoun. We are determined to exhaust every possibility to get the severely disabled children and some adults to Mustard Seed in Jamaica, where I know they will be taken incredibly good care of. Ramkassoun is one of the few people who I would totally put my hand in the fire for, said Moreno. His dedication is unmatched. Silvera said Village Rion initially asked for an ironclad guarantee that Mustard Seed would not put any of the children up for adoption and that they would be returned to Haiti once the situation improves. Silvera said after giving their word, he thought they were in the clear to start getting the group to Jamaica. Then Village Rion made a third request. He must fly to Haiti to discuss the matter with her. That was 2 days before the American nurse from New Hampshire and her daughter were kidnapped in Port-au-Prince. That same day, the U.S. Embassy ordered the withdrawal of non-emergency personnel due to the escalating violence and kidnappings. Silvera, whose own family migrated to Jamaica from Haiti, said not even his Haitian roots were enough to convince his advisors or his wife that he should make the trip. As he considers the plight of the children, he said, he can't help but think they'd rather the children die than leave Haiti. Next, from slave route to gang crossroads. Arkenai, the town where Haiti Children is located, is on the edge of the West Regional Department that encompasses Port-au-Prince, and it borders Artibonite Mountains, or the Artibonite Mountains. Today, Arkenai, a historic city where the leader of Haiti's successful slave revolution created the country's two-colored flag, is smack in the middle of Haiti's gang warfare. In November, gangs cut off access to Route National 1, connecting the city to Port-au-Prince. In that same month, 8 of the orphanage's employees, including 4 nurses, were kidnapped and their bus taken. The kidnapping occurred on the same Port-au-Prince road where Wasserman, Babette, and Jean-Claude were prevented from crossing, Krabecker said, when they were the only 2 miles from the trauma hospital. We have so many needless deaths, and it's just unfathomable to me that nobody will let us get those kids out of there, she said. In March, not far from the orphanage, 2 popular beach resorts, Wahoo Bay Beach and Bay Beach, were attacked and looted by gangs along the white sand beach of Côte des Arcadins, also known as the Haitian Riviera. 2 gangs operating in July in the Arpenonite Valley carried out summary executions, killing at least 29 people during what one watchdog group described as a real nightmare month. In August, escalating gang violence in Port-au-Prince catapulted most of the capital into a no-go war zone. We're getting harassed all of the time, Crabbaker said, noting that armed men patrolled the streets around her orphanage, blocking access to both the main road and the sea, which they sometimes used to circumvent the gangs. When we pulled out of the gate many times in the past month, they stopped the car. They won't let us pass to get to the hospital in Port-au-Prince. If we can get them to a hospital within an hour, she added, we've always been able to save them, but we're not equipped to save them without critical care. Late last month, the consequences of this turned into another round of tears when another one of her kids, Pedro, 27, died in his sleep. Speaking about gangs, Krabecker, who hasn't been able to visit the facility since March, said, she has never seen such demonic behavior in my life. The children are dying terrible deaths, she added. Krabecker, who knows Henri, says she has tried to appeal to the prime minister directly but has had no luck. Village Rion, she said, told her she would need to go to court to adopt each of the children into her custody. What courts, Krabecker said, referring to the dysfunctional judicial system that has been in tatters since the violence began. She says even though she is not the kid's biological mother, she has raised them since they were infants, and most of them call her mom. Do you know how it feels to lose 4 in 2 weeks? We had a triple funeral and our poor little kids. Those who are mentally impaired, they don't understand it, she said, and I'm not able to go and bury my own kids. Well, gang violence is not limited to Haiti's capital. It is found in many locations around the globe, and that includes the tiny rural town of Mendota, California. Now, it's located in Fresno County and lies in the rich agricultural area of the San Joaquin Valley. Our article, headlined "Mendota is Bustling, Rural City Rising 5 Years After Major MS-13 Gang Crackdown." This was originally written for the Fresno Bee by Yesenia Amaro and was also published in the September 16, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. A photo caption reads, "On the edge of farmland, the Fresno Memorial Gardens grave of Leon brothers, Daniel and Renee, were reportedly the first victims of the MS-13 gang, killed in Mendota, September 11, 2011. Now their story. Joseph Riofrio still remembers the flashbangs, bullhorns, and a law enforcement armored Humvee in the valley behind his house that startled him awake in the middle of the night 5 years ago. It was a large raid on the MS-13 gang that shook the small rural Fresno County town. It wouldn't be until later that day the mostly Latino and predominantly Salvadoran community would find out what had rocked the town. The large local, state, and federal operation netted 25 MS-13 gang members in Mendota and Los Angeles on charges related to murder, violent assaults, and drug trafficking. More than a dozen murders in and around Mendota were connected to the gang. MS-13 terrorized the impoverished farm-working town for nearly a decade before state and federal help arrived. 5 years later, city leaders and law enforcement officials say Mendota is a safer community, and they will do everything in their power to not let the gang get out of control as it did before. Some known MS-13 gang members, they say, are still in the community, but they're not committing any apparent crimes. Thus far, 7 of the 14 brutal murders connected to MS-13 that took place in and around Mendota from 2015 to 2017 have been solved, leading to charges. In late July, 10 MS-13 members and associates were indicted on murder charges linked to 6 of the murders. Earlier this year, another MS-13 member was sentenced to life in prison in connection to another murder. Nonetheless, city officials say there's a lingering stigma of the MS-13 violence that riddled and branded their community. For example, some still believe Mendota is a violent town. Mendota residents who spoke with the Bee agree the town's safer, but they say there's still a certain level of fear among residents, many just making ends meet as farm workers. The median household income is $38,360, and 37.5% of the residents live in poverty. The town, which city officials describe as the cantaloupe capital of the world, has a population of about 12,618, but it can fluctuate based on the seasons. Mendota has historically been impoverished, and most of its jobs are in agriculture. Officials, however, say they've been trying to expand and diversify the city's economic growth. It's clear and visible to the eye that Mendota is progressing as a town, bustling with several projects underway, including a new home for the Mendota Police Department and City Hall Chambers in the center of the city. More companies are doing business in the city, such as Element 7 Cannabis Dispensary. New small businesses, including a gym, are expected to open soon inside a large commercial building. Mendota recently reestablished its Chamber of Commerce. Mendota has also its first-ever Salvadoran-born mayor. "I really think we're in a safer community," said Mayor Victor Martinez, 34, who arrived in Mendota from El Salvador when he was 4 years old. "We're not going to tolerate gangs. That's out of the question. This is not a gang hub," he said. Martinez was appointed as mayor in December. Next session, or section, "Is Mendota Safer Today?" On the day of the law enforcement operation, Riofrio recalls seeing many individuals handcuffed in the alley. He also remembers a man telling him to go back inside his house. The head was cut off the snake there, but still, that left us fearful of, that maybe that's not the case, that there's people out there lurking, said Riofio, a Mendota council member who has been on and off the city council for several years. Mendota hasn't had any activity from MS-13 since the big sweep 5 years ago, said Mendota Police Chief Kevin Smith. Mendota hasn't had any activity, said Smith. The most recent available data on violent crimes in Mendota come from 2020. There were 73 reported crimes that year, according to the FBI's Crime Data Explorer. In 2018, the number of all reported violent crimes was 86, and in 2016, at the peak, the number was 97. The public data still shows. Now, we do know that there are some MS-13 members in the city, he said on a recent morning, but they are very quiet and they don't engage in what we see, any criminal activity or any violence to attract attention to themselves. The MS-13 gang members living in the town were identified by police before through various ways, Smith said, including self-admission and tattoos. It's possibly said that those living in Mendota could be committing crimes elsewhere. Mendota police are not getting calls from its citizens to report new crimes tied to the gang, such as extortion, he said. Martinez said the strong stance that Nayib Bukele, the president of El Salvador, has taken on the gangs has contributed to the less gang activity in the U.S. and possibly in Mendota. MS-13 first emerged in the 1980s in Los Angeles, and its members are from El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, and other parts of Central and South America. Gang members who make it to the U.S., Martinez says, don't want to be in the gang anymore because they don't want to be deported and get caught up in the crackdown in El Salvador. Bukele's controversial war on gangs has jailed more than 64,000 people. Nonetheless, Mendota police, Smith says, are doing their best to keep a finger on the pulse in the community so officers can get ahead of any gang-related activity. I've said this 100 times, he said. We definitely don't want to allow it to get out of control the way it was back prior to the raid. We certainly don't want to see MS-13 reemerge. Mendota has a relatively small group of Bulldogs gang members, but Smith says they're relatively quiet. They commit some crimes, such as accosting and robbing people of their cell phones or some cash. If there are any gang-related crimes in Mendota, Smith says it has been from the Bulldogs, not MS-13. It's been a relatively quiet little town, he says. The real violence that we've had over the last year, well, it's been domestic. In August, Mendota police shot and killed a man who was attempting to stab his girlfriend. Another recent example is the case of the man who stabbed his two brothers and set the house on fire. On a different occasion, a mother and daughter stabbed each other, he said. Nothing different in town has created the spike in that, Smith adds. It's just kind of the normal calls for service that we get, like any other city. Domestic stuff. Half murders solved, status for the other half unknown, is the title of the next section. Authorities said a total of 14 brutal murders in and around Mendota were tied to MS-13 from 2015 to 2017. The B newspaper previously said it was able to identify at least two additional murders connected to the gang that went back to 2011. Soon after that is when local law enforcement officials began to plead for help to tackle the dangerous street gang because the small police department had just been rebuilt two years prior. Out of the 14 murders that took place from 2015 to 2017, a total of six recently led to murder charges, said Lauren Harwood, a spokeswoman for the U.S. Eastern District Attorney's Office. Additionally, in early April, an MS-13 member was sentenced to life in prison for the kidnapping and murder of Abel Rodriguez. On December 18, 2017, Israel Alberto Rivas Gomez from El Salvador and living in Mendota and his fellow MS-13 members kidnapped the 19-year-old victim in Mendota, drove him to a remote location approximately 30 minutes away, and used a knife and machete to murder him, all in the furtherance of MS-13's criminal gang enterprise, according to an April sentencing statement from federal prosecutors that did not identify Rodriguez by name. The mother of one of the murder victims, Joanna Solario Maya, told the Bee in 2011 that 2 years after the MS-13 crackdown, she still had no answers about her daughter's death. She was losing hope there would be justice. Maya's murder was among the six that led to murder charges in late July. Alfredo Leva, 43, of Richmond, California, and Juan Carlos Urias Torres, 34, of Stockton, were charged for that murder, which was carried out for the purpose of gaining entrance and maintaining an increasing position in MS-13, according to a July statement that only identified Maya's murder as a murder of an adult female on July 13, 2016. The murders of Christine Estevera and Angel Sanchez were also among the six that led to murder charges in July, this according to the indictment that only identified them as the murder of CE and the murder of AS. Next section, Mendota was branded as MS-13. Rio Frio says Mendota was branded as MS-13, and some people even from neighboring towns still believe Mendota is a violent place. The stigma for MS-13, he says, continues to linger. We want to show positivity, he says, but all the hard things we dealt with put a dark cloud over us. Even just a few years ago, he says, Starbucks had looked into opening a coffee shop in Mendota, but decided the town was too violent. A Mendota father of four who asked not to be named for fear of retribution says he has noticed a decrease in gang activity since the sweep. As they talked near City Hall, he kept turning back as if checking behind him. He arrived in Mendota 20 years ago after fleeing gang violence in El Salvador, but he later came across a similar situation in Mendota. The father recalled a scary incident when he was riding his bike in the town's Rojas Pierce Park, when other men whom he believes could possibly have been MS-13 gang members approached him and started chasing him. He took off on his bike, pedaling as fast as he could. Almost what I lived in El Salvador, he said in Spanish, of what Mendota was like prior to the police operation. He said there's still violence and a certain level of fear, but it's not like it was before. I live with more tranquility, he said in Spanish. I think what the police are doing is good. They're everywhere. They have more presence. Mendota Police Sergeant Frank Rentiera, who has been with the department since 2009 when it was reestablished, said officers are being more active and proactive with the community. For example, Rentiera says officers have been working with the community to build trust and to make residents aware of the importance of reporting crimes. Many Mendota residents in the past had been hesitant to report crimes because they feared retaliation. Even a Mendota police officer received threats of violence from MS-13 when the gang operated in the rural town, a former Mendota city manager who worked there from April 2014 to July 2018, previously confirmed. We're very vigilant, Rentiera says. Jose, a Mendota resident who asked only to be identified by his first name for fear of retribution, points to an alley from his porch on a recent not hot late afternoon. They would tag the alley, Jose, who also fled gang violence in El Salvador, says in Spanish, now we are better. A 55-year-old Mendoza resident who asked not to be identified also said he hasn't heard much violence lately, not like before when we would hear of murders in the town. He says it feels safer, but there's still fear. And that brings us to the end of today's Journey on Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us again next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Questions and comments can be directed to 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.